Well, to be specific, it's actually gerrymandering because it comes from Governor Gary's name, who was a governor of Massachusetts back in the 1800s during the founding times of our country, when there was a battle royale between his party and another famous figure from the founding father days, Patrick Henry. And the lines were drawn in such a way that they resembled the shape of a salamander, and an enterprising reporter called it a gerrymander because the lines were so distorted in order to be able to excise Patrick Henry from a seat and give Governor Gary's party the advantage. That name has stuck, but over time it's evolved into a more current way of saying it, which is gerrymander.
So this has been going on for a long time.
Yeah, that's right. Pretty much since the founding days of our country.
And how is it applied in the modern world? How do we see it play out?
So what we see is that the way that redistricting is generally done is that there's a party in charge of our legislature, generally the majority party of a state. Their leaders will be the ones who control how the lines get drawn. Oftentimes, where the legislature draws their own lines, they go behind closed doors. You'll hear stories of them renting a hotel room across the street from a legislature. They'll parade individual members from their own party one by one into a secret room where somebody's drawing the lines. And then oftentimes those lines are then introduced into the legislature as a bill, and there's a rush vote to pass it along party lines. Unfortunately, when state legislatures control their own line drawing, they oftentimes will not only squeeze out the other party, but they will protect their own incumbents in a way that eliminates true choice for voters, and it eliminates the ability for challengers to come up and really give them a run for their money. And oftentimes it also can lead to corruption and non-responsive elected officials, because literally they're just elected again and again. There's nobody running against them. They've kind of cut out any challengers from their district, and so they're running without challenge, without accountability.
You know, one of the things that was interesting to me when I first learned about this years ago in high school is, like, why are these shapes of these districts so weird? Why is it done this way? But when you think about it, each district has to have the same number of people in it, right? Yes. And people live in all over the place.
Yeah. So it is true that I think one of the things that people react to is oftentimes the shape of the district. And sometimes the shape of the district can tell you a little bit about the motives behind why something is the way it is. In California, we had a district where a senator lived in a poorer part of the neighborhood in Los Angeles, but decided that because he had come up in the world and he now had horses stabled in a much richer neighborhood, he wanted to draw a loop that had a tail from his neighborhood that he lived in all the way to where his horses were stabled for no good reason other than he had the power to do it. And so you see sometimes these oddball shapes, but a lot of times the shapes might also track the boundaries of a city or a community, and people don't move or create cities in nice geometric square shapes. If you look at the outlines of most cities, they tend to have fingers and protrusions everywhere.
I heard of one really brazen example. I want to say it was in North Carolina, but I'm not sure, where a state representative's individual home was actually, like, cut out of her district, and then she was not eligible for office
anymore.
That's
right. Certainly in North Carolina, but unfortunately that is the case for most instances of gerrymandering. In fact, President Obama, when he was a rising star in the Illinois state legislature, he was attempting to run for a state Senate seat. And because in the first race that he'd run against somebody he'd lost, he bore the brunt of the next round of redistricting, where they had carved his house out from a particular seat that he was looking to run in. And they literally just carved a one block nook out of the district exactly where his house was. So it happens quite commonly where these kinds of decisions are made to disadvantage an incumbent or disadvantage somebody from the minority party.
Well, we know now that the Supreme Court decided on a pretty narrow margin, 5-4, that it was not within the judiciary's purview to evaluate or to second guess the decisions of state legislatures that do this work. Could you give us a little bit of analysis on that decision and what the two different arguments in the case were?
Sure. Well, So what's interesting is that coming out of North Carolina, the legislature essentially was saying, yes, what we did was for partisan advantage. Yes, we did screw the other side over. Yes, we actually assigned a partisan score to each precinct, and we made decisions about how to draw those lines in order to assign voters to districts where we thought we could pick up the most number of seats. And they were unapologetic about it. And in fact, actually, the lawyer for the state legislature said again and again, I don't even want to talk about whether or not we could create a standard or whether or not this is the right thing to do. There is no reason for the Supreme Court to weigh in on this kind of issue. And unfortunately, the Supreme Court, even after really struggling during oral arguments about the right and wrong of this, and even in the opinion, saying that partisan gerrymandering is abhorrent to our democracy, ultimately said that it was essentially not their job to step into this and to determine whether or not there was a constitutional standard by which you could draw a line and say, these are the guardrails, and outside of that, you can't go. Unfortunately, what it ultimately does is it gives a green light to a lot of state legislatures to punish dissent. We're verging on giving a green light to legislatures to behave as if they were the Politburo, to take away the ability for there to really be an adversarial system between two parties. And instead, once a party wins at the beginning of the decade, they can wipe the other side off the political map and control elections for the rest of the decade. That is leading us down a very dangerous path. And if we eliminate the possibility that there's real competition and choice in elections, we are potentially undermining one of the basic premises of American democracy.
In some states, this redistricting process is handled by an independent board or commission. Do we see better results under that system, or is it still ineffective?
I might say that I'm a little biased because I am from the state of California, and I was pretty involved in helping to create the California Citizens Redistricting Commission. And in California, because we have the initiative process, we were able to craft a law that voters passed overwhelmingly to say that a group of 14 people who don't have any ties to politicians, who don't give major money to candidates, and who aren't, you know, related in some way to the political system, were going to travel throughout the state, take testimony, and ultimately draw the lines. Even when the lines were challenged, they had a 9-0 decision to repeatedly uphold the maps because the process had been transparent. The lines that were drawn were fair. They really respected communities and city lines. And ultimately, when it all played out, there were a fairly large number of districts that could swing either way between Democrats and Republicans, because that's just how sort of those communities were kind of coming up. And from time to time, when there's a blue wave, then those seats can be captured by Democrats. And when there's a red wave, they could be similarly captured by Republicans. In my mind, that's a true definition of a democracy that's working right, where people have the ability to elect candidates of their choice.
So what plans do you have, does your organization have going forward? Now we have this Supreme Court decision. As I understand it, it does leave the door open for action at the state level still.
Yeah. There are really three different areas that we can move. One is to support states that have initiatives to continue passing those initiatives to reform the system. So we're seeing possible action in states like Arkansas, Oregon, and Nebraska. In states that don't, we're pushing for legislation. So states like Pennsylvania, Minnesota, Virginia, they're looking to amend their constitution or pass statutes that would essentially create some guardrails on the redistricting process. At the federal level, Congress is pushing H.R. 1, the For the People Act, and embedded in that, they would also require, as a bottom line matter, that every state create a citizens commission that meets certain basic minimums. And then lastly, litigation. So there are about two dozen states that have some kind of clause within their state constitution that protects free and fair elections. And we've seen in Pennsylvania that that's been a successful way of challenging the state lines and congressional lines using the state constitution, where the decision is ultimately made by a state court and it's not reviewable by the Supreme Court.
A fight on many fronts now. Kathy Fung, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.